Good evening, and welcome to episode 45 of The Winning Agenda. Tonight, our panellists include 2014 Australian National Champion and 2014 World's Top 16 competitor, Jesse Marshall.
Hello.
Runner-up for the 2015 Melbourne Regionals and three-time Magic the Gathering Pro Tour competitor, Wilfie Horrig.
Bleep, bleep, bloop.
And I'm your host, Brian Holland, 2014 Australian Nationals Top 8 competitor. We're talking about old Hollywood today, folks. We're going to get straight into it with Trope. It's an Anarch program, install 1, memory 1, influence 3. When your turn begins, place 1 power counter on Trope, click and remove Trope from the game, shuffle 1 card from your heap into your stack for each power counter on Trope. This is a very sort of clunky, slow way of recurring some specific cards, and it's not really even proper recursion like we see in cards with Clone Ship or Deja Vu out of Anarch as well. What do you think, Jesse?
The ability to shuffle cards back into your deck, we've got Levy AR Lab access, which there are a lot of max decks that splash.
Well, that's a very specific thing, because it not only shuffles all of your heap back into your stack, but it also lets you shuffle away your hand and draw 5 fresh cards. So
that's true, but it does cost you 5. So I guess the trade-off with this is that you could have it in play, hopefully from early in the game. I guess would be the optimistic view, and then by the time you've milled your deck, you might have somewhere between 10 and 12 to 15, depending on the size of your deck, counters on this, and then you can shuffle a decent portion of your heap back into your deck and reuse the cards that you want. I mean, one of the downsides of Levy AR Lab access is that you're going to draw a lot of guff that's not relevant at the late game stage that you're in. So the fact that this allows you to select the cards that are relevant, just the economy cards or just whatever the particular programs that you need, and shuffle them back in at that stage could be quite good. So look, it may find a home in Max. The problem always is going to be consistency. It's slow, so you need to get it out early. The fact that it's a program means that it's probably the most tutorable card type, which might help it, but I also think that
the fact that it's a program and it costs memory does stifle it a little bit, particularly in Anarch. If you want to be doing a recursion with parasites or playing mediums and things like that, you know memory can get tight pretty quickly. I would prefer to see this kind of effect on a resource. The next card is Spoilers. It's a 1-cost Anarch resource, virtual. Influence 3, whenever the corpse scores an agenda, he or she trashes the top card of R&D. So this is a similar effect that we see, obviously, in noise decks. On face value, people get really excited about this kind of effect, like they did with Gravedigger. Gravedigger is very different to this, however, because this card is only really likely to score twice, maybe 3 times in a game before it, you know, it doesn't really do anything outside of that, in my opinion. Jesse, what do you think?
Corpse have a decent amount of control over where agendas are in terms of whether they're in their hand, in play, in archives, or in their deck. And when they score an agenda, it's usually going to be not in the first couple of turns of the game. It's obviously sometimes it will, but then you're unlikely to have this card in play. So in the mid to late game, a corp is going to be able to estimate how much of an impact trashing a card off the top of R&D when they score an agenda is, and they're going to be able to mitigate that either through having a Jackson or through not having the agendas go back into R&D because you're telegraphing that this is going to happen beforehand.
But let's also just say, though, that the corp usually has to deal with this kind of thing in situations where they don't have the time to make that decision, right?
Like, that's true.
Against noise, when they get like just randomly milled because noise is installing viruses.
Yeah.
Corps still win in those games, right?
Like, that's right. And I mean, adding this into the mix is the question. Like, in noise, is this going to be, you know, the straw that broke the camel's back in terms of making that trash ability really go over the top of Jackson again? I don't think that this is a necessary piece of that. I think having pieces in your deck that allow you to use that trash ability as an incidental threat to the corp whilst allowing you to access servers efficiently, like the current sort of Wild Cakes builds are doing, is the best way to use noise. And I don't think this really fits into that. So, plus, as you pointed out, it's not likely to trigger very often in the game.
The first criminal card is the straight-up drug dealer. I thought they were, when they printed StimHack, they were going to try and mask it and bring it into the realm of metaphor, but no, this guy is trying to deal you some drugs. It's a 1-cost resource connection, influence 1. When your turn begins, lose 1 credit. When the corp's turn begins, draw 1 card. This is an interesting sort of effect, and it's a low install cost, aggressively costed, and also at very low influence, so very easy to splash into other builds. Pseudo-scorch protection in a way, drawing a card at the beginning of the corp's turn, but it also does save you a click if you think of it in a way that that's a click you're not spending on your next turn to draw a card in a faction where, as Liam Prasad would say, every card really costs you a click.
Yeah, I mean, this is not to be confused with Stim Dealer, but yeah, I don't think that it is particularly good. I mean, it only costs one to install. You're essentially paying a credit for a card. Yeah, I mean, like, maybe that's good enough.
Is it, well, would you rather have this or Authorized Hotel? Authorized Hotel, yeah.
Yeah, look, I mean, the question is whether in a criminal deck you're going to be wanting to go into the long game, but also be aggressive enough that you need these cards early to actually do stuff you want to do with. I guess it could bring some of those slower strategies like Ian Sterling to being a little bit faster by using what they have a lot of, which is credits, and giving them what they don't have a lot of, which is cards. As you point out, criminals don't necessarily have easy access to cards. So, I mean, when you compare this to Earthrise, it's going to be better than Earthrise over a very long period of time. It's going to be as good as Earthrise, maybe slightly better over a moderate period of time, and it's not going to be as good as over a short period of time. So in an Andy deck, you're probably going to prefer to have Earthrise. I mean, maybe you'd prefer to have this anyway because you're confident that your economy is strong enough and that your security testing Desperado account siphon is going to get you enough credits to turn into more of those cards, that this card is almost purely a windfall. There are going to be situations where you do get locked out, you can't trigger your testing, and those credits start to drip away, and the cards aren't doing what you want them to do, and you're drawing more testings and more desperados, and that's not really getting you anywhere. So, I don't know. It's obviously a double-edged sword. There's a bit of downside, but it could play a role in making some of those slower crim decks that have heaps of cards in their deck dedicated to pure economy that's not dependent on the game state. In those decks, this might be consistent enough and relevant enough over a long enough period of time that it's worth playing.
The last criminal card is Rolodex. It's a zero-cost resource, virtual influence one. When you install Rolodex, look at the top five cards of your stack and arrange them in any order. When Rolodex is trashed, trash the top three cards of your stack. Now, I've seen a bit of talk online about pairing this with Street Peddler and sort of planning out what you're going to get. I do think that's a bit clunky. This is a very sort of interesting card, especially to see in Criminal. We speak a lot that, you know, Criminal has card selection and not card draw, and this is like a variant of that. I'm not really sure when the trash effect is going to come up. I don't think there's any way she can sort of trigger that yourself, and I'm not sure why the corp would really get fussed about that, but it seems to be some sort of printed drawback.
I guess it's suggesting that you might want to use it with Aesops to get rid of some irrelevant cards from the top of your deck that you've seen using it. Like, you get the two best cards.
Oh, I suppose so, yeah.
The other three that you don't really want. I mean, yeah, that is an effect that we haven't really seen. There's not a lot of deck manipulation on either side in the game. This is pretty much identical to Precognition, though, on the corp side, isn't it?
Yes, exactly right, which doesn't really see a lot of play.
Yeah, and I mean, this is on a resource. Yeah, it just doesn't seem like very interesting design space, but I guess there's not a lot of effects that do this. I don't know how valuable it is in Netrunner to be able to do this, but look, there may be something down the track that really wants you to look at the top card of your library in more of a relevant way than Oracle May does, but I don't know.
Yeah, no, knowing the top cards of your deck doesn't really change much. Like, you're still going to draw those cards anyway if you're going to draw them, right? The first Shaper card features the art of my favorite Netrunner character. It's Fansight. It's a virtual resource, install 0, influence 1. Whenever the corp scores an agenda, add Fansight to your score area as an agenda worth 0 points. When this was first spoiled quite a while ago, I remember being confused as to why you'd want to trigger it and what it would do. Someone told me at the time what it did, and I went, oh, of course, it triggers with that, and I've actually forgotten because it seemed to have been so irrelevant. What does this trigger with, Jesse, and why would you want to put it in your deck?
So what it does do is it gives you 9 credits off your Data Dealer.
Will you be playing data 3 copies of Data Dealer and 3 copies of Fansight in a deck anytime soon?
Look, probably.
Look, I think where we stand is this card has really got not a lot of effects currently in the pool to really trigger off it or to make it playable, especially when deck space is so tight. I think it needs some more support cards or other cards that it can trigger off to make it good and to make you want to put it in your deck. Yeah, worth noting, it is low influence, so you could put it in Criminal if you're playing Data Dealing.
Yeah, and also, like, you can just be like, if they score one, you'd be like, yeah, I got one too.
Yeah, exactly right.
Which is cool.
Which is cool. That's totally cool.
Yeah.
The next card is Film Critic. It's a one-cost resource connection. Influence 1. Film Critic can host a single agenda. Whenever you access an agenda, you may host that agenda on Film Critic. The agenda is no longer being accessed and is uninstalled, and has the ability click, click, add an agenda hosted on Film Critic to your score area. Wilfie, what do you think?
Yeah, so this card is good against a wide range of agendas and cards in general that see play at the moment. Most importantly, the Future Perfect, which might be the best card in the Replicating Perfection deck, and one of the main reasons it's good. And so having a kind of slightly narrow card that has the ability to interact with agenda points, which are the main avenues towards victory in any deck, in such an aggressive manner, in the sense that if you can hit one Future Perfect with it, it can easily win you the game single-handedly, is quite powerful, even if it is kind of narrow.
Yeah, this answers Future Perfect, NOPD contracts, Fetal AI, and that means that as runners, you're going to be able to overcome some of the most common ways that the Corp tries to hurt the runner in the early and mid game and prevent them from scoring out, which could really tip the balance of the game significantly. Obviously, runner deck space is really tight and all of those usual caveats apply, but if you can manage to fit this into your deck at one influence and one install cost, it's an extremely powerful card that helps runners to do the core thing they want to do, steal agendas more efficiently, and stops them from being prevented from doing so or taxed hard for doing so or punished for doing so by some of the most commonly played agendas, and that seems like a really powerful effect to me.
The last runner card for this pack is Paparazzi. It's a neutral resource, install 0, influence 0. You are tagged. Prevent all meat damage. So I guess if the Corp gives a shit, they can trash it because you're tagged. They can trash your other resources, so you're definitely not playing this in a deck with any other resources in it. It's pseudo Scorched protection. They still have to give you a real tag if they want to kill you with Scorched. But
yeah. For like an
I mean, you could play this an Arc deck that goes tag me, and you could use that as your Scorched protection as opposed to I've had worse or Plascrete, if you don't want to have to pay the install cost for Plascrete.
Yeah, so you can rely on Econ Denial and the fact that it's going to be hard for them to trash resources when you're tagged because you've got them on so few credits. Because, I mean, we've all been in that situation as a Corp where you've been siphoned or vamped and you're on so few credits that you're struggling to defend your servers from runs, let alone worry about trashing those resources.
I think this is an interesting card. Again, I don't think it's quite where we want it to be at.
And even in that situation, gotta rely on them wanting to kill you for this to be relevant in that very corner case scenario where your deck's doing exactly what you want it to do, in that you've kept them poor and tagged yourself and they have to want to kill you, rather than just playing Plascrete, which they do have to want to kill you, but it's good no matter what. Like, it does what you want it to do regardless of the game situation. Whereas this is only good if they can't afford to spend the time and money trashing it.
All right, the first Corp card is Ronald Five. It's an HB asset, Bioroid, Res 3, Trash 3, Influence 3. It is unique. Whenever the runner trashes a Corp card, including Ronald Five, he or she loses a click.
I don't think we can skip over this card without noting that it is the first card in Netrunner to feature a winning agenda panelist.
Oh, yes, Hollis Echo. That's great.
Yeah, congratulations, Hollis, for getting your invitational card. But in all honesty, mate, like, I love you, Hollis, but you could have done better with designing this card. I think it's pretty bad.
It's pretty bad. Basically, it doesn't... If the runner gives a shit for whatever reason, maybe if they've got a bunch of stuff they want to trash, maybe they're running Imp and they want to get rid of your hedge funds and Scorched Earths with their Imp and they don't want to lose clicks to do that, apart from just running on their last click and not having to worry about it, they can just run and trash this card on their last click.
It is worth noting that this doesn't have that they lose the click if able.
It doesn't, yeah.
We're assuming they just lose it off their next turn.
Well,
because otherwise, why would they emit that text, right?
Why would they emit the reminder text? I know. I hope.
Yeah. Well, no, it's not reminder text. It's rules text.
It's rules text, right. So, I mean, Jesse's being facetious. We're assuming this works just like Enigma does, just like all the other lose clicks if able cards. Like,
but I am actually genuinely confused about why it doesn't say
able. I agree, too. That's really inconsistent, and I think this card is just not very good.
Maybe Hollis forgot to write it on...
I think so, on the back of the napkin that he submitted it in, which is, I think, their standard. The next card is Enforcer 1.0. Ice, Sentry, Bioroid, Destroyer, AP, Res Cost 1, Strength 5, Influence 2. As an additional cost to Res Enforcer 1.0, the Corp must forfeit an agenda. Now, Jesse, I've just said that. How good does this card have to be? Does it have to be as good as Archer? Can it afford to be a little less good as Archer? Because it only costs one and not four, or you could argue two. Does this card have to be very, very good?
Its strength is already lower than Archer's, but then again, its res cost is lower, so fair enough. So, I mean, Archer's got four relevant subroutines, three more relevant than the fourth. So you'd want this to have to be ending the run and doing something else, or if it's not ending the run, then it has to do something pretty damn good.
Okay. In addition to that first text, it also has the Bioroid text, meaning the runner can spend a click to break any subroutine on Enforcer 1.0.
This card suddenly got... It better have some five brain damage subroutines or something.
Yeah, so the four subroutines are trash one program, that's fine. Do one brain damage, that's okay. We've seen that effect quite a while on other cards, hasn't really come up. Trash one console, which is very oddly specific. And then trash all virtual resources, which is even more odd and even more specific. I was very excited when I first saw the spoiler for this card in Spanish. When I read that first bit, it says the court must forfeit an agenda. I'm thinking, holy crap, HB is getting like their own Archer equivalent. And I suppose that's what this is trying to be, but it is nowhere on that power level. One of these subroutines is relevant. It's going to be relatively easy for the runner to break through this, either by clicking it or using a breaker. The fact that the corp has to forfeit an agenda, and this is in a faction that doesn't have a 2-for-1, which gives a very good, one could argue, a decent benefit in terms of the credit boost that Hostile Takeover has. You'd have to play this in a deck with the 2-for-0 agenda, which really does nothing. You're never going to be forfeiting a 3-for-2 to res this card. And particularly if the runner is playing against HB, and they know maybe that you're playing a lot of Bioroids, or they're expecting Eli's even, they're running early in their turn, and if you do res this and forfeit something, they can click through the one subroutine. Remember, a lot of the time, only maybe one, maybe two of these is going to be relevant.
And even then, like, they can break it at strength 5.
Yeah, it's not a huge deal. Like,
yeah, and it's AP and Destroyer, so Deus Ex and Sharpshooter hit it.
Which is, this is a criminally underpowered card for the cost. Yeah. If you want to forfeit an agenda, you better get a very, very good benefit out of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that first drawback that you've identified, Brian, of not being able to play this in faction with a 2-for-1 that is anywhere decent, playing it with a 2-for-0, look, I don't think that card's really bad, that 2-for-0. So, yeah, that is the biggest drawback, I think. But even then, these subroutines are so underpowered. Yeah, it's...
Yeah, I can see if anyone reses this card against me ever, I'm running that server... my second last clicking through the trash program, maybe the brain damage, or I'm just breaking it. A lot of the time, I'm going to look at this as a 5-strength sentry with two subroutines. Because trash one console, trash all virtual resources is really, really going to be you know, relevant.
Well, I mean, trash one console is probably going to be relevant more than...
More, definitely more than virtual resources, right? But, like, the console, like, sure. Like, a lot of decks can function without their console.
Or yeah, but you don't want to be losing it.
No, it's not necessarily. But again, we point out how easy this thing is to break. So if you are like, oh shit, okay.
Yeah,
like,
I don't want to lose my console. I mean, this comes back to what I said in my article, which I hope everyone's read, about ICE, which is that they're going to fire rarely. Is that the biggest benefit of something like Archer is when people face plant into it and they get their rig wiped.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Yeah.
The likelihood of that happening is already low enough because they have to not have a sentry breaker that can get through it, and you have to engineer this situation in the game where they don't have the money or they don't have the breaker to get through it. Trying to do that with something like this, that not only do you have the harder difficulty agendas to score to forfeit to it, but it's got the Bioroid drawback. I mean, it makes it a lot worse.
Indeed. The first Jinteki card is, it's a trap! It's a trap. Ice, trap, res 2, strength 0, influence 3. Whenever it's a trap is exposed, do 2 net damage. Very odd sort of effect there. And the one subroutine is the runner trashes one of his or her installed cards, and then you trash it's a trap. So this is a trap ice. It doesn't have the basic ice types. Unfortunately, it is strength 0. You can just parasite it if you're really worried about the subroutines firing off. I'm not really sure about the... I honestly just think again that this is flavor when it says if it's a trap is exposed due to net damage. There's very few exposed effects in the game at the moment. It does get around sort of that snitch au revoir deck, which I don't really think is seeing much play at the moment, because, you know, you can't just snitch into it. You take 2 to the dome every time. If anything... No, it doesn't even trigger from, like... R&D. It's not when you access it, it's when you expose it. Sorry, yeah.
And even then, they can just run into it once after that and not expose it with Snitch, and then just trash one of their installed
cards. It's just an installed card, too. It's not even like a program. How much better would this card be if it was just trash one program?
I mean, how much better would this card be if it was, like, subroutine, concentrate all firepower on that Superstar Destroyer?
The next Jinteki card is an offer you can't refuse. It's an operation, cost 4, influence 3. Choose a central server. The runner may initiate a run on that server during which he or she cannot jack out. Otherwise, add an offer you can't refuse to your score area as an agenda worth 1 agenda point. This is a very unique effect. I'm really glad we're seeing it in Jinteki. The court can sort of set it up, so maybe if it's in a replicating perfection build, but maybe the runner made a big run on their previous turn, as often happens against RP, they've depleted their resources, you play this and point to a server that has maybe Tsurugi, Susanoo no Makoto, and like a toll booth on it.
Enforcer 1.0.
Enforcer 1.0, even just to really hit home.
No, they've got no clicks on their turn.
Oh gosh, yeah, you're right. Damn. However, we do talk about deck space a lot. Is this an effect you want in your deck? It does relatively nothing in the early game. We might see this if PE comes back again anytime soon in a big way. The fear that the runner can sometimes have of running somewhere, although being a central server, unless they're running HQ, it's very hard for the corp to engineer a situation which, you know, they're going to hit a snare or a shock or something that could potentially kill them. And the getting the one agenda point out of it is a marginal benefit. Like, if we do see a build that this plays in RP, it could be good because it can just mean the game sometime. If the RP player is ever on, you know, maybe 6 points, so they do occasionally play a one-pointer now. What do you think, Jesse?
Yeah, I think this card's actually best used out of faction. Each of the court factions is getting one of these cards that turns into one agenda point, I think, in the next couple of packs. This one is definitely a decent one. The cost is quite high. Like, four credits is a very high cost for an operation, and it has to be very good to justify that. An agenda point is probably worth it. The fact that it's conditional reduces that a bit. Three influence is very high. I think this is probably in many ways better outside the faction, in that more damaging ice, I think, not in terms of net damage, but in terms of program trashes and things like that. Harsher sentries in destroyers in HB and Wayland that you can leverage using this card. I mean, this is, funnily enough, actually quite good with Enforcer 1.0. As I pointed out, the runner doesn't have clicks on the corpse turn, so they can't click through it, and also Enforcer doesn't end the run. So sentries like that that don't end the run, that do negative things to the runner, that are reasonably expensive to break, that's where this card is going to shine.
This is also a better card to play in HB than the 2-for-0 as well, if you want to forfeit something to Enforcer 1.0.
Yes.
I just want to point that out too.
Exactly. But three influence is extremely tight. High, which means that it's probably rarely, if ever, going to see play outside Jinteki. So it is good in PE. It is good in damage decks. It's good with sentries that don't end the run. I think it's quite powerful, and I think it will see actually quite a lot of play.
Yeah, it should be very good. I'm excited for it. The first MBN card we're talking about is Harpsichord Studios. It's an identity, division, deck 45, influence 15. The runner cannot steal more than one agenda each turn. Wilfie, where do you stand?
I'm a little skeptical about this card because identities that are far above other ones in power level just dominate the game in such huge respects. For example, Engineering the Future and Near Earth Hub in their respective factions really can't be matched by most identities, regardless of how powerful they make them in most senses, because they're really efficient in basically every game of Netrunner that you're going to play. And this has a little more limited effect where it's only useful if your opponent is threatening to score multiple agendas per turn, which means that you're probably not defending them very heavily and you're trying to race rather than trying to set up some impenetrable server or set of servers. And so this lends itself to a very aggressive strategy, which doesn't work so well against Near Earth Hub, because Near Earth Hub is already so good in aggressive strategy, but does have a few key benefits in that, one, it still allows you to punish your opponent with when accessed abilities, when they do access agendas but can't steal them. Plus, it has a kind of replicating perfection-y ability where it gives your central some protection if your opponent wants to go at your remotes, and it gives your remote some protection if your opponents want to go at your centrals. And so the way to making this card good is by trying to maximize the fact that your agendas have inbuilt defense, and not throwing caution to the wind and trying to play more aggressively than Near Earth Hub tries to.
The next MBN card is a Ward Bait. It's an agenda, Sensi, so it's a 3-for-1. If a Ward Bait is accessed from R&D, the runner must reveal it. When the runner accesses a ward bait, you may place up to 2 advancement tokens on a card that can be advanced. We did see a rise for a little while there in a Near Earth Hub list, which went very horizontal. I can't remember what the moniker was for that. It might have just been Near Earth Hub Horizontal.
Near Pad, pardon me.
Yeah. Which played a lot of sort of face-down agendas mixed in with assets and things like that. It also played snares and this kind of card could be effective in a list like that. You could use it to score out a card for cheap on your next turn. You could use it to...
Yeah, I mean...
yeah, it's very sort of niche. Like, there's not a lot of MBN decks out there at the moment that are leaving cards that can be advanced on the table for, like, over a turn.
The place that everyone's brain goes with this, I think, is...
Is with Harpsichord Studios?
Yeah, with Harpsichord Studios, and if I install this and an Astro, what if they run this and I get two counters on my Astro and that's just insane or whatever, like... Yeah,
they've got the 50, or they've got the 50% chance of stealing the Astro.
Right, and if you engineer this into another situation where you've got two award baits in play, and then you're pretty much guaranteed to score. Well, you are guaranteed to score one the next turn as long as you've got a credit. You can engineer this in such a way that you've got two award baits in play, in which case you're guaranteed to score one next turn because you only need to advance it once. That's not even that good. Like,
no, because you're just catching up to the runner at that point, right? Yeah, like, oh, we just scored a point. I better do it in a second too.
And the benefit of scoring this is not great, as opposed to other 3-4 ones. It doesn't give you any benefit if you actually score it, which it makes it reasonably questionable for me. Like, it's best if they access it. Accessing it from R&D, you have to have something in play at that point that you're going to want to advance again. Like you said, you're going to have to be going very horizontal and be leaving stuff in play like NAPDs or something that you're pretty sure they're not going to want to steal or be able to steal even if they do run it. And at that point, it's not really a deck that I want to play.
The next MBN card is Explodapalooza. It's an agenda, Sensi. It's a 4/2. If Explodapalooza is accessed from R&D, the runner must reveal it. When the runner accesses Explodapalooza, you may gain 5 credits. It's a similar sort of credit swing to NAPD contract, but it is not better than NAPD contract in that sense, because the runner's still getting their 2 points. 4/2, so that, as we talked about a long time ago in our segment on agendas, 4/2s are a weird sort of space to be in, because especially in a faction like NBN that has access to multiple 3/2s, and it's really hard to justify playing a 4/2 that doesn't protect itself like NAPD contracts does. What do you think, Jesse?
Yeah, so this doesn't protect itself per se, but it protects itself in the sense that they are not going to want to steal it if you're playing mid-seasons, so they're either going to want to film critic it.
Well, they can't refuse. That film critic is the only situation in which they're not going to steal it. Because this is not...
Yeah,
like,
no, I mean, yeah. Other than not running, right? So if they, yeah. if I'm sitting down opposite NBN and I don't have a film critic and I think they're playing mid-season and they might have Explodapaloozas in their deck, I'm going to be cautious about running, and it's going to change my math, because if I do run into one, I have to steal it and I have to make them gain 5, which is going to make their mid-seasons more likely to land. So in that sense, it's quite a powerful card in concert with mid-season replacements, but in just your run-of-the-mill fast advanced deck, probably not as good as NAPD, because in that deck, you're just purely racing and you're desperate for them not to score at the same speed you are, and there's going to be some situations where you're forcing them into a run where they don't have 4 credits is the ideal, and then they hit an NAPD and they can't score it. Whereas this, they can score it, and if those are the last points, they win. But at the same time, this isn't just all downside in that situation, in that sort of deck, because if it's the first agenda they score, in some ways it NAPD opens scoring windows, but this may give you the credits you need to resi Sansan, which NAPD might not have done, because they might have stolen the NAPD and paid the 4 and been a bit economically damaged at the same time that you were really low on economy, in which case by the time you've recuperated, they've also recuperated. Whereas if they steal this, you might then be able to res the Sansan that you've installed last turn and score out an agenda. So there are going to be situations where either one is better in the early game in those pure fast advanced decks, but NAPD is probably better in the late game. But then I think this is better in the mid-season decks, and it pairs better with mid-season.
I think we'd also be doing a disservice to the flavor fans that if we didn't mention that if you put this in a Harpsichord Studio deck, you can live the sort of pipe dream that if a runner steals an agenda earlier in the turn, and for some reason they decide to run again, and they access this, you're getting the 5 credits and the agenda staying where it is. So I think that's obviously being the fact that it's a movie, a Sensi, then that's probably where that's happening. The next MBN card is Early Premiere, an asset, res 0, trash 2, influence 3. When your turn begins, you may pay 1 credit. If you do, place 1 advancement token on a card that can be advanced in a server. I think this is similar to a ward bait in the sense that the only place I can really think of it going at the moment would be the Nearpad deck, because, again, that's the only deck I can think of in MBN that wants to leave its agendas or other advanceable cards on the table for a turn. Even if we do see like a Glacier deck happen in MBN anytime soon, I don't think there's going to be a situation in which you can have this card on the table and have it not be trashed unless you want to build multiple servers, in which case you're really spreading your already thin ice even thinner.
I think this card's quite interesting.
It's definitely interesting. I'm not
it allows that. You to score 4 for 2s
yeah.
straight away. Not straight away.
You've installed it already.
No, so it's essentially, I guess, a never advance card, not a fast advance card. And that's interesting. It makes that sort of never advance strategy a bit better in that you've got a cheaper way to score out your 5 for 3s or your 4 for 2s without, instead of using Bardic Labor or Sansan. But like you pointed out, it's quite vulnerable whilst it's in play, and your agendas are obviously usually quite vulnerable as well. High influence means that it's not going to make its way into many decks out of faction, but it does something interesting, it does something unique, and I think it would see some play.
Yeah, well, I'm certainly looking forward to see what comes of it. The next NBN card is Casting Call. It's an operation condition, cost 0, influence 2. Install an agenda from HQ face-up and install Casting Call on that agenda as a hosted condition counter with the text, whenever the runner accesses this agenda, he or she takes 2 tags. This is, again, a very unique effect. I think it's quite a powerful effect to ask that of the runner to install this face-up with the agenda, saying, here it is. If you want it, you're taking 2 tags, as well as having to pay whatever you have to pay to get into the server where this card is. That can be quite threatening, especially out of one of the factions that is known for being able to kill the runner with meat damage. And taking 2 tags is also quite taxing in the sense that that means the runner really has to maybe run on their first or even second click if they want to get in there and remove those tags in the same turn, as well as having credits left to remove them. However, the major drawback for this card is that, and a drawback that I think most people don't realize the first time they read it, is that you have to install an agenda from HQ face up, which means you need Casting Call and the agenda you want to install in your hand at the same time.
Yeah, I think even if this was like an oversight AI that you could install on the agenda once it was in play, it would still not be particularly good. I mean, I think it's okay. But the question is, can you afford to dedicate a deck slot to this? You know, this is the way that I evaluate all corp cards. Like, can you afford to dedicate a deck slot to this? Does it do what it's trying to do better than the existing cards?
I don't want to go too deep on the rabbit hole because it's not what the card does. But if this card did say just install it like it was an oversight AI, I think the effect would be very good. Like, we're seeing like some Argus and NBN decks, a Butcher Shop list out there that are like playing Ghost Branch at the moment. And like having that threat, I think, is really good in those kind of decks where you want to threaten them with tags. But that's not what the card does. So that's what I thought. I think this effect is quite powerful. It's just really stifling the way you need to do it.
Yeah, so the fact that you've got traceless tags is good, and that it does what the corps want to do in that you want to present them with a decision where both sides are downsides. So if they don't run, then you score an agenda. That's bad for them. If they do run, they take 2 tags. That's bad for them. That's the makings of a good card. But like you say, the requirement to have them both in your hand and install them together is difficult. It's not like Mushin, it's worth pointing out, so you don't have to install it in a new remote, so you can install it in your well-developed remote. Even then, that drawback is reasonably significant.
The last NBN card we're talking about is Old Hollywood Grid. It's an upgrade, region, res 5, trash 4, influence 2. Agendas accessed from this server cannot be stolen unless the runner already has a copy of that agenda in his or her score area. This applies even during the run on which the runner trashes Old Hollywood Grid. Wilfie.
Yeah, I think this is a pretty powerful card, but it suffers from a couple of major drawbacks. The first is that it's really in the wrong faction. As I'm sure most people have found out by now, NBN isn't exactly where your mind goes to when you think of Glacier decks that require defensive upgrades to score through remotes. Given that that is exactly what this card does, it seems like a bit of a strange fit. Strangely enough, they decided to print this in the same set as Film Critic, which basically shuts it down completely. And the third point is that one of NBN's strongest cards, even in a slower deck, but especially in a faster deck, is Sansan City Grid, which suffers in that it's a region which you need to put on a remote server, and ideally have it be at least marginally defended, and so these two cards really conflict, and I think it's pretty clear to see which one is stronger.
The first Wayland card is Hollywood Renovation. It's an agenda, initiative, public, and it's a 5 for 3. Install Hollywood Renovation face-up Whenever you advance Hollywood Renovation, you may place one advancement token on another card that can be advanced, or two advancement tokens instead if there are six or more advancement tokens on Hollywood Renovation. Similar to the other other public agendas, I think we're probably mainly going to focus on the first ability and not worry too much about what happens when you advance it in excess. It's also worth pointing out that this can advance ICE, as well as advancing an agenda at the same time. So it is kind of similar a little bit economically to Oaktown Renovation, which I think we all agree is one of the most powerful agendas we've seen, especially for Wayland in the last little while, in the sense that if you've got playing this with advanceable ice and you're spending your resources to advance this agenda and also putting an advancement counter on one of the ice, particularly maybe one of the space ice that reduces the cost, that can be quite economically viable. Jesse, what does the board think of this, you know, at work?
They were reasonably excited about it when they heard about it, but to be honest, it's probably not quite going to cut it for a couple of reasons. Incidentally, I think this card is probably the main reason why that ruling clarification about advancing these renovations only being the game action advance is that otherwise this would probably be an infinite combo with another one. Like you say, it advances Space Ice, which is really good economically. I think a game like Oaktown Renovation, the reason I like that is that it changes the tempo of a usual game, and it means that instead of dipping on credits, you're actually going up in credits when you're scoring your agenda, which is great. This, rather than dipping on ability to defend your remote because you're not gaining resources to res your ice and you're also not installing stuff, this increases the strength of your ice and or reduces the res cost, which is effectively gaining your credits. So again, it changes those equations around, and it means that you can possibly score this earlier in the game than you would be able to score any other 5-for-3, or at least have a better defended remote than you would otherwise with another 5-for-3. So I like that. I like that you're getting the benefit front-loaded with these cards when you're advancing them, which means that you're not relying on scoring it to get anything good out of it. You're already getting something good just by giving it a go, which is nice. The other thing that I would like to mention about this, as opposed to the others, I think this is the only one in which the second mode is really relevant. If you can get it up to 5 and feel confident leaving it on the board, which is a huge ask. I mean, there wouldn't be many...
Especially in Wayland.
Yeah, there wouldn't be many times when anyone has scored a 5-for-3 and thought, I could leave this for another turn and it would be fine. But if you were in that situation, you can then leverage that into scoring another 4-for-2 from hand the next turn, which is pretty sweet.
Yeah, so it's very powerful. So hopefully we'll see that.
If I do that once in my life, I will be reasonably happy.
Yeah. The last Wayland card is Back Channels. It's an operation. It's a transaction. Cost 0, influence 1. Trash a card installed in a server and gain 3 credits for each advancement token on that card. Interesting effect. Worth noting, it is a transaction. It does trigger with the core set Wayland. If you were to do this to, I'm not
a
sure,
a Hollywood Renovation
doing,
like with 9 counters on it or something?
Yeah, that for some reason you'd rather have a bunch of money than 3 points. That there are situations where that could be a thing.
Yeah, it seems really bad. I think one of the resources that's hardest to come by in the game is cards in remote servers with advancement tokens on them outside of a failed trap. And I don't think Wayland is in the business of playing failed traps all that often.
Especially yes. With advancement counters on them.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what I mean by failed traps. Yeah, yeah. You've, like, installed advance or motion something and it hasn't worked out. Really, to be honest, like most of the time you're going to get more value, particularly in Wayland where you've got government takeover, if you've got a failed trap, either investing more in it because they're probably going to have to run it at some point, or just leaving it there and hoping they run it at some point, then slotting this into your deck to try and leverage that situation into 9 credits or 6 credits or whatever. Yeah, it just seems like a really, really bad card.
Yeah.
I'll look forward to resting my glasses on it.
And the last card in Old Hollywood is Vanity Project. It's an agenda, advance 6 score points of 4, so it's a 6-for-4, and that's it. It is 1 influence. Where do we stand?
You didn't want to read out the flavor text?
I nearly did because I thought it was actual text until I...
Any agenda with a weird points value is worthy of looking at because some decks really do just want to minimize their agenda density, but I think this card has a few strikes against it. One, if you do the maths, it doesn't actually reduce your agenda density by more than 1 agenda if you're already playing all 3-pointers or all 3-pointers in government takeover, which is the minimum you can have at the moment. And so having to pay influence for that, while it is a saving, it isn't such a huge saving when considering that you're trading 5-for-3 agendas, which have really powerful abilities when you score them, for a 6-for-4, which has no ability when you score it, and 6 is really much, much more than 5, and so this card kind of doesn't seem as good as it might, as you might think when you think, oh, you get to reduce your agenda density, just because the more of these you have in your deck, the further and further away you go from really being able to score 7 points to win the game. And scoring this and a 3-pointer really isn't realistic for any deck to be able to create servers that are impenetrable for that long when runners have such strong economy over the course of the game, like especially not just burst economy, but especially
for me, I think this card is at its most powerful, not only in reducing your agenda density, but just helping the corp to win. I mean, the fact that you can get 4 points off one agenda is pretty good. And I mean, Project Beale, yes, you can do that there. But the fact that this can be splashed into any faction, you can Mushin no Shin and then score 4 points the next turn, that seems pretty good to me. Obviously, that has its limitations, and there's only going to be certain situations in which you can do that particular thing. But yeah, I mean, the fact that there are lots of different ways that you can get this into your score area with less investment than it would otherwise take you to score 4 points by like paying 5 advancement tokens for 5-for-3 and then 3-for-3-for-1, for example, it's a lot better, a lot more efficient, a lot better than that. So I think it could help corps to get to 7 points more easily.
But I mean, when considering what the 5-for-3s that C play usually are, it's sometimes not even that much more efficient when you consider that, say, Pryrek gives you a huge economic advantage when you score it, so does High Risk Investment, and Future Perfect has an ability which means that you can get to score it, whereas this you might not even be able to score.
That's true. And that's obviously the trade-off, but I mean, Future Perfect is a good example. There's a lot of times when you will have an opportunity to score that and it hasn't sort of had a chance to protect itself yet in the game, and you do, and it doesn't feel that amazing. If you got an extra point off it, it would feel pretty good, I think, as a benefit for one extra advancement token. I don't know, like, just comparing the two cards in terms of what they give you when you score them, getting the extra point, I think, is quite a lot.
But of course, then you have to consider what happens when you don't score them, in which case this card, I mean, has the huge disadvantage compared to Future Perfect. But of course, yeah, that's clear.
That's all the time we've got tonight for the Winning Agenda. We're sorry it's been a bit of real talk this week. This pack was, for me overall, a bit disappointing. There are some very fun cards in this pack. There's one or two competitive cards in this pack. Overall, I'm a bit sad face about it, so we're sorry if this episode was a bit of a downer. But if you want to get in contact with us, maybe chat to us about this pack, maybe something you thought we missed, you can hit us up on Twitter at Winning Agenda. You can send us an email to thewinningagenda@gmail.com. Or you can get the conversation, get the party started on our Facebook page, which is The Winning Agenda. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll be back next Monday like we are every Monday. And we look forward to hearing from you again, guys. Thank you so much for coming on. Cheers.
Thanks for listening.